Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded April the 23rd, 2010. Weather, a lack of farmer movement of soybeans in South America, and possibly a better outlook for the U.S. economy all came together this week to put a little uptick in the marketplace. Is it to be believed? We'll try to find out today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio today include Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson, Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, and Greg Johnson of the Andersons, all from Champaign, Illinois.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Well, let's begin with this question, Jackie Vakes. As we looked at the weekly trade in the number, while there seemed like there was an awfully good uptick in the marketplace, corn futures finished lower. Why was that the case?
Well, I think corn futures are struggling for a couple of reasons. One being the fast planting pace that we're experiencing. You know, the outlook for some rain coming in should help germinate some of the corn. And I just think, you know, it right now with the prospects for a big crop, it's a real convenient futures contract to actually spread yourself against, buy beans against corn.
Bill Mayer?
Well, I guess I felt pretty good the way the corn closed, even though it was lower for the week because of what Jackie said. We had such good planting weather, and we're probably, well, I know we're adding acres out there of corn, and everything's really going in good. We got this rain predicted for the weekend to get some of the crop up, so we're just in a trading range. I mean, we went down, we tested, seven or eight times. We tested some lows there and couldn't break it. And we came back and tried to go up and see if we could get there at 390 area on the Deese corn. And we're just kind of stuck in a sideways pattern right now.
Greg Johnson.
You know, in addition to the rain and the fast planting pace, there were some comments made on Friday from the former USDA secretary that said he did not anticipate the EPA increasing the ethanol waiver from 10 to 15%. I think that weighed on the on the corn market especially. All the other commodities, with the exception of oats, really pretty much had a higher week. And so corn and oats were the exception, but the other commodities had a pretty good week.
May corn this week had a high of 363 and a quarter, a low of $3.47 and three quarters. The settlement price down 11 cents in the old crop at 353. December futures were down 16 cents at $3.78 and a quarter. Jackie, I suspect farmers are calling, but not often because they're in the planter. What are they? Are they asking you about old or new crop at this point when they do call? And what primarily are their questions?
Well, they're asking about both, old crop and new crop. There are a number of guys who held back and didn't make sales. Probably the number one question is, do we think that July corn can get back up to the 370 level and can December corn get up to the $4 level? Those are the number one questions that are coming in.
Do you have good answers for them?
Do I have good answers for them? I agree with Bill. We're stuck in a trading range. I think the top end of the trading range for July would be 370 perhaps, but it's going to take some continued really good export sales, maybe some kind of disturbance in the weather before you're going to get a chance to do that. Let's say a frost. As an example, we've got guys in northern Illinois that are 100% planted on corn already. Southern Wisconsin, the last freezing date is May 30th. So there's an awful lot of issues that could come up that could give us a pop that direction. My number one thing to them is say, look at what your basis is. That's the thing you need to be checking.
And what kind of basis do we have?
Well, we've seen corn basis continue to improve. Farmers, similar to last year, we had abundant carryout last year and wide basis levels going into spring, and it seems like as soon as the farmers got into the field, basis levels started to improve, maybe more so than what we've historically seen, and we're starting maybe to see the beginnings of that again. Basis levels feel like they're ready to start improving.
Greg, can you take us back to last fall, late last fall as opposed to very early last fall, but last fall, and talk about a bit for me, the number of bushels in percentage that you were able as an elevator to purchase from producers, and at that time what you thought that meant for the July and August and June time frame, and whether that's changed very much over the winter season and early spring.
The farmers sold ahead, and then the market selling off last fall I think basically convinced farmers to put it away and not worry about marketing unless we saw a big rally. We started to see that rally, and then the January 12th USDA crop report just knocked the wind out of our sails. The market sold off so quickly that I think farmers were hoping to sell on a bounce, which never did happen. And so as a result, farmers were left holding a bigger quantity percentage of old crop corn. Some have started to throw in the towel. In the last couple of weeks, we did have a 20-cent rally 2 weeks ago, so some people took advantage of that. But still, I would agree that there's a lot of old crop corn that still needs to move yet.
Is that right, a lot of old crop corn in your opinion?
It's kind of hard for me to gauge. From our client base, I'm not sure that's the case. But I think just talking with people, watching basis levels, they have been improving, but they were, you know, still are not anything great for having the farmer in the field this long. I guess I would say that's probably true, that we have a lot of old crop corn out there. I think it's still going to be interesting as we move into the summer here and see, you know, how this quantity of corn holds up, and is the quality of corn out there that we hope there is. We've seen a lot of end users come in and really try to pull the top end quality out of the market, I think. And, you know, I think there's still some questions as far as that goes.
Well, we were just out in Kansas last week, and it was interesting because there was a tremendous amount of corn moving from Kansas, which is normally not a big moving state. It usually stays there with the cattle, up into Nebraska because they were paying a huge premium for quality corn because they had so much corn they needed to blend out. And so I think the big question comes down to, when do we get to a point where we maybe don't have a lot of good quality corn anymore? You know, if that actually comes about, and then how is the market going to handle that? You know, I think guys who have had poor quality corn, maybe Greg, you can tell us, did they move it? You know, has it come into the elevator?
Yeah, the poor quality corn, we hope. We've seen the worst of it. There were a lot of bins that went bad in Jan, Feb, and March, and most of that corn hopefully has moved. Hopefully the corn that's still on farm is in good shape. But there's a ton of corn, and brokers are telling their elevator clients to hold on to that old crop corn. There's a big spread between old crop and new crop, and they're saying hold on to that corn, hope for a good quality crop this year, and then you'll be able to blend that old crop poor quality corn off with the new crop.
Is that the same thing that a producer should do? I mean, if they can get it to hold, I suppose. Here's two questions. You think that the elevator is better capable of holding a poor condition crop than a farmer would? And what makes you better at it to begin with?
Just the sheer quantity. If you have one bin go out of condition, an elevator might have three or four other bins to blend off. If a farmer has that one bin of poor quality corn that's at, say, 10 to 20% damage go out of condition, it may be 100% damage by the time fall rolls around, and then you need X number of bushels, you know, more to blend off with that damaged corn.
Okay, so the advice within the industry is hold it off and try to market together with the crop next year. But of course, we're looking at a pretty good size carry in, and at this point, a really big crop. Is that something that a farmer should try to do, or can they manage the process?
I wouldn't think the majority of farmers can really handle it. You know, and I think that you've got guys too that are very concerned. Some guys had poor quality crop a year ago and tried to do that and then ended up with poor quality crop again this year. And so I think they're going to be reluctant to do it. And you just really have to have a lot of bins. Like Greg said, he's got three or four bins you can maybe move things to, but farmers normally don't have that.
And I think the other thing that the farmer is dealing with, there's carry in the market right now, as Greg said, and the market is really telling you to carry that corn. But the farmer has to deal with the flat price situation, too. And I think if you're going to do that, you need to come in, put a floor of some kind underneath your futures price, so that if you come in here and the futures price drops but the carry narrows up and it's time to move the corn, you've been protected that way. So I think that's two items that the producer has to look at that's different than the elevator.
Okay. You're going to protect yourself. But let me ask a secondary question, because I'm going to make some assumptions here that most of the listeners to this program that are in Illinois, in the primary growing regions, and they're all primary growing regions anymore, but let's say from Effingham to Interstate 80, so I-70 to Interstate 80, most of them or a lot of them are in the acre program. Do they need to do something, or can they depend on that acre program to pay out at the end of the year?
I guess I look at that as a second layer protection. I don't feel that it's a primary layer protection. One strategy that we've looked at, I mean, go out and maybe sell some new crop corn. If you have that sold and the carry maintains, you've got corn that you're going to carry into that new crop. If not, you're going to be producing some more new crop there.
I will say this.
You're taking advantage of the carry that way.
I will say this about acre. When we were talking with Gary Schnitke about acre and the new and decisions based on crop insurance and whether you need to drop your crop insurance down because of your acre, he suggested the answer was no. So if you had signed up for acre program last year, and that means by default you're already in for the coming year, that he viewed those as two separate decisions. So
I look at it as layers. I look at it as you have your marketing program up here, your sales, your option strategies, your hedges. You have your crop insurance as the next level of protection, and then you have the acre program, and then down on the last level is that SURE program.
You're going to protect those bushels too? On the bottom,
if you're looking, you know, if you're planning on getting the carry in the market, yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, the biggest thing that the biggest mistake we see made often is guys look at the board and say there's carry in the market, but you can't do anything about it unless you either sell the carry in one way or another, either in the cash market or covering it in our market. You have that smile on your face. What does that mean?
Well, I'm just considering. I mean, a producer may look at it and say, oh, is this just the time to pull the trigger and be done with it? And your answer would be?
My answer would certainly be, I think that if you are at that point, and depending upon the quality of your grain, I don't see a problem with pulling the trigger and being done with it. You always have the opportunity, if you're using any kind of marketing, where you can come back and re-own it if something happens. So, you know, why sit back and wait to see if my fear is that we've got an early start on corn. If we get good weather, that these traders in Illinois are up in Chicago are not going to be looking at a 13 billion bushel crop. They're going to start thinking it's a 14 billion bushel crop. Why wouldn't they? When you look at what we've had the last 2 years in terms of bad weather and poor starts, and now we've got an outstanding start to this market. So if you're sitting on that crop, why not move it rather than, again, goes back to checking the basis.
Well, I don't think there's a black and white answer to that question that you ask. If a person's sitting here and he's got 10% of his corn left from 2009 crop, then I feel pretty comfortable that he can sit here and maybe carry that into take advantage of the carry in the market without a lot of risk in his position. If he's sitting here and he still has 80% of his old crop, 2009 crop, then we're going to start whittling that down on rallies and trying to go out and take advantage of the carry, get some sales made, get some puts underneath, or whatever it takes that fits into his logistics. So I don't think there's just a black and white answer there.
Ignoring whether it's the right time to make a sale or not, when do you as an elevator operator want that corn in your bin?
From a quality point of view or from a price point of view?
Both.
Both.
And you can take them up separately. They can be different times, I would think.
Well, you know, typically the basis will get better now that the farmer's in the field. So we, as an elevator, we'd as soon have the corn now and capture that carry ourselves. There's good carry in the market. From a quality point of view, if the farmer wants to maintain that risk himself and then bring it to us later on, that would be great too. But, you know, there's good carry in the market, and basis levels tend to improve over the spring and the summer.
And I think it needs to be said too, coming from an elevator background myself, don't try to pick up 10 cents in basis improvement and carry and, you know, have a 15-cent damage discount. That doesn't do you any good either. So
we're just getting a good start on our conversation, talking about corn and soybeans and the other commodities here on Commodity Week. Our panelists will be back here in the studio in just 2 minutes when we'll continue on this April 23rd edition.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Another warm and dry week allowed spring planting activities to accelerate across Illinois and the Midwest. Rain was absent across the state until Wednesday night, when light showers moved across central and northern Illinois. However, any rain that accumulated quickly evaporated Thursday under mostly sunny and warm weather, along with dew points in the 40s. More substantial and widespread rain developed northeastward across Illinois Thursday night and Friday, marking a change in the weather pattern over the Midwest and at least a temporary end of dry weather. Temperatures this week were closer to normal than in the first 2 weeks of April. Actually, the average daily temperatures ranged from near normal in northwestern Illinois to 4 degrees below normal in southern Illinois. While daily high temperatures were generally above normal this week, overnight low temperatures were well below normal, in fact near freezing in many areas early this week. The last week of April will be generally unsettled, with chances for at least scattered showers on most days. The next major system to affect Illinois looks to be late in the week, when a warm front may be lifting across Illinois, triggering more numerous showers and thunderstorms. Temperatures next week should be near normal for the most part. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 23rd day of April, 2010. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio include Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and Jackie Vakes of Stewart Peterson, all from right here in Champaign County. When we last talked with them, we had taken up old crop corn, but hadn't gotten any further than that. So let's discuss new crop corn that's been going into the field at a very rapid pace. What do you think on Monday USDA will show for total across the nation and in Illinois in particular?
Well, I think Illinois, the number was 37%. We could be very close to 70%, and that's statewide. Up in the northern part of the state, they're not as far along. Here in central Illinois, most people are done, except for the ones that wanted to wait. They chose to wait for some rain because they didn't want to plant too much corn in dry dirt. So even though the weather forecast sounds a little wetter for the next couple of weeks, we're so far ahead of normal that I don't think we're experiencing any problems here in central Illinois. So 70% probably for the state and maybe close to 50% for the nation.
There is some school of thought that once the planters start to roll, if they're really moving along quite nicely with corn, they'll continue to plant corn. Will that be the case this year?
Yes, I think so. In fact, I would say that I've heard that from several of my clients. As we've gone through the week here, maybe do another 80 here, another 120 there, that they weren't sure which way they were going to go because they have had the time to get it done. We were running into some corn stalk situations where they'd worked the stalks earlier and a little bit too wet maybe, and really didn't want to go in and plant anything in those because it was too dry. But I think we will see more corn acres, and personally I think we'll see more bean acres as well.
My. That's a surprise.
Wait a second. I'm going to look at a my out of that. Why do you
Well,
think
I think one thing, if you look at the wheat condition report for Illinois, for example, I think we're not going to have a lot of wheat in Illinois that actually makes it through the spring. We're going to see a lot of that torn up and put into beans probably. So I guess that's where I'm coming with the bean acres.
Everybody agrees that we won't have a lot of wheat in Illinois. Oh, wait a second. We already know that's the case.
Yeah. 2 years ago, we planted 1 million acres in Illinois. A year ago, we planted 850,000. This year, we only planted 350,000. So even here in Champaign County, you know, there's a lot of people that just didn't have time to get their wheat planted. In fact, I only know of a couple, and I talked to one, and as Bill said, he tore his wheat up and is planting corn. So we don't have a big database to go off of, but from what little bit I know, yeah, some of this wheat is going to get tore up, and it wasn't much to begin with.
I wasn't making light of the thought that there would be more soybean acres, just the light that there aren't very many wheat acres in the state of Illinois. All right.
And when I say more than we're showing on the March report.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So back to new crop corn. First, do you agree there will be more acres? And secondly, what's the impact?
Well, I do think we're going to see some more corn acres. I question the 200,000 acres that they dropped out of Iowa, you know, even though they increased ours. And I agree with Bill wholeheartedly. When a guy gets in a planter and he goes, our clients that have been talking to us from other states outside of the Illinois area have been a little less aggressive at doing that. And it's primarily because if you start to talk into the northern tier, they're planting into some pretty cold corn, or pretty cold ground. And so they're not quite as anxious to expand their acres. We've got a better ground temperature here than in most areas. And so I think, you know, if the rain moves through and it gets back out and they get back on the planters again, I believe we probably will see more corn acres coming out of those guys. What are the implications? Well, you know, anytime you're looking at that, you're going to have to hope that exports are going to pick it up. Feed, we just had cattle on feed today, 96% total. You know, that's lower than the average guess was, so we know that it's not there. And so I guess I'd have to say that the implications would be a bigger carryout, and that's never a great thing when it comes to that. Now, when you talk about what Greg said, you know, if the EPA doesn't come through, although my belief is if the EPA raises it to 15%, we'll get a bump in the market for a day, and then all it'll do is give us a higher bottom rather than an extremely high top unless we really have some type of weather problems.
Is everybody a willing marketer of the extra acres? If you're a producer and you put extra acres of corn in because it's going well, do you go ahead and market that part of the crop?
I think that's our job as analysts and marketers to help those guys, you know, look at the numbers and say input costs are down. You know, let's not try to predict price. Can we make money, you know, at these prices? And I think right now the answer is yes. You know, everybody wants $4 corn, but maybe with it lower input costs and a good start, so a good chance of having a better than average yield, if you plug in 185 instead of 175, maybe you can make money with 380 futures instead of $4 futures.
Yeah, the question probably is better. Maybe it's not a question as opposed to a statement. There was a reason that the planter continued to roll on corn, and that must have been because they thought they could make money at current levels.
We actually did some work in the office today, and it looks to me like corn still in central Illinois, I'm saying, still beats the soybean situation hands down this point.
Soybeans, May futures, $10.65 the high, the low at $9.72.25. Settlement price, $10 even, up 14.75. November beans at $9.79, up 13.5 cents. How did you like the market this week?
Well, I like the market this week because I've been one of the people saying I think beans are going to go up. But, you know, so, you know, I thought it was pretty good. I think it's interesting. Today we started seeing some stories out on the wire about Brazil planting less beans for this next year, primarily because they're not profitable. And, you know, the big difference between the U.S. and Brazil is we can borrow money against crop that we have, that we're currently holding, where in Brazil they can't do that. And so that definitely would discourage people if they have large stocks sitting there right now for, you know, more planting. So I think that underpins things, as, along with, you know, the China demand. You can't deny the fact that China was an aggressive buyer again. They're really a smart trader from the standpoint they come out and say they're going to roll their old crop to new crop, which turns out to be 16 million bushels, drive the market down, and then come back in and be heavy buyers.
Bill, have you been impressed by that spread between corn and soybeans?
Yeah, and I, you know, if you sit down and look at why, I think one of the things we just talked about, the trade, I think, feels that if we want to get the bean acres, that we need to probably see that spread change and widen out a little bit. Jackie mentioned China. They continued to come in and buy pretty much right through the American or South American harvest, and I think that was a little bit of a surprise to the trade, at least. They seem to be shunning the Argentina oil somewhat, and I think that's kind of a surprise to the market. But I will just throw out a caution that there are still a good chunk of beans to be sold out of South America, and, you know, we are approaching levels, I think, that look a little bit more attractive to them.
Well, I wonder here then, is everybody a holder of beans, or do you look at this price and say this ratio has to go one way or the other, and corn stocks are going to be so big that beans will come down rather than corn going up? And does that make you a seller of new crop?
I want to be an aggressive seller.
Yeah, I think the farmers are basically sold out of old crop beans, and they've sold a chunk of new crop beans already. So, you know, how much more do they want to sell until they actually get some planted and see what kind of start we get off to? But there's nothing wrong with being 70%, 75% sold. It comes back to profitability. We can make money. Even if beans do go a dollar higher because of Chinese demand, we can make money at these prices.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And you know, for guys who don't want to push forward any further on cash sales, I mean, we've been doing put strategies. Basically putting a floor in there and saying, come on, prove to us it can go a lot higher than this.
Let's take up wheat. May futures, a 499 and a half high, low at 466 and three quarters. Settlement price up 2 3/4 for the soft red at 493 and a quarter. July at 505 and a half, up 3 cents. Wheat usually just gets sold over the scale. You want to do anything?
Correct.
You want to do anything different?
No, I mean, I think basis levels will get better because we planted so much less wheat. So if you're a farmer and you do have some wheat, you know, separate your futures marketing from your basis marketing. I think basis will have to get better as we get closer to July. The futures may or may not get better, but the basis definitely will get better.
Finally, what's your best piece of advice for a producer at this point? What should they think most about as they are spending a lot of time in the cab by themselves?
Well, I think they really have to be thinking about, I guess we talk about it constantly, profitability and making sure that they protect prices when opportunity is there, because you never know how it might change.
I would agree with that, and I think probably the priority on this old corn, if they have it, and laying out some levels. What levels are you going to move that at if you're waiting for the prices to move higher?
Differentiate between old crop and new crop. We need to play defense on old crop. We've held on to it too long. You know, for whatever reason, we can blame it on the USDA. We can blame it on whoever. But, you know, we have to set some floors and just stop the bleeding on the old crop. But the new crop, there's plenty of time yet. You know, I can't get too excited about price prospects based on supply, but we haven't talked really about demand. China, the price of corn over in China is $7.25 a bushel. It almost works for the U.S. to sell corn. They are buying DDGs from us. Who's to say that this isn't the second year in 50 years that they actually buy corn from us? So I want to be a little hesitant about getting negative on new crop corn.
And that wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists in studio have been Jackie Vakes, Bill Mayer, and Craig Johnson. You can hear it again at willag.org.